I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on all the broadcast stations of Civic Media. It is this week on Civic Media. Lots and lots of things to chat about this afternoon. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in this afternoon for Maggie Dawn. Honored, delighted to be with you this afternoon. Let me tell you about why that is happening. Maggie Dawn this afternoon is serving as the MC for a major event in Madison, at our state capitol. It is being called the March for Democracy, and Maggie is going to be leading a number of presentations, discussions, and speeches there on the Capitol grounds, beginning this afternoon and continuing for a couple of hours. An important event in the state of Wisconsin this afternoon. Maggie, a big part of that. Representation from Wisconsin's Green Fire, Soil Sisters, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, Planned Parenthood, Healthy Climate Wisconsin, and the nation. All of that happening. All of that happening this afternoon. This afternoon on the Capitol grounds, 4 to 6 on this Tuesday, August 6th. Maggie Dawn presenting all of that important information, that important advocacy, that inspirational discussion in support of our democracy in 2024 here in the state of Wisconsin, here throughout the United States of America. My name is Jim Santel. Again, delighted to be sitting here in Maggie's chair for this hour and next hour as well, here in the broadcast station of Civic Media, joined by my ever faithful and superb producer, Brian, who is going to be along with me, taking your phone calls, taking your comments, questions, as we talk today about the news stories of the day. And there are some very significant breaking stories going on. Taking your phone calls, as always, at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. We can also be contacted, Brian and I, through the Civic Media app. Drop us your question, your inquiry, your comment. Again, delighted to have you with me this afternoon on this, the Maggie Dawn Show, on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. In addition to that important programming note, I also want to take note of the fact that yesterday was an historic day in Wisconsin, in the United States generally, and throughout all places on the face of our planet. Yesterday was the 12th anniversary of the horrific Sikh temple shooting in Oak Creek, the Gurdwara there on a beautiful Sunday morning, August 5th, 2012. The congregants there gathered to observe their faith, to be a part of the community, to engage in their historic faith, 500 years old, there in Oak Creek, and the glory and the peace and the joy of that morning disrupted, terribly, terribly interrupted by a mass shooter who came in and killed what ended up being 7 people altogether, a white supremacist who decided that somehow, in his mind, it would be somehow an evening portion of his life, an evening event for his life, a way of sort of evening out the score that he felt was inappropriately balanced in favor of other people and not himself, went into the Sikh temple on that day and shot 6 people, shot a number of people. A 7th died much later on. We know that the victims of that hate crimes shooting on August 5th of 2012 remain in our memories, our thoughts, and our concerns even to this day. Their names: Paramjeet Kaur, Satwan Singh Kaleka, Prakash Singh, Granthi Singh, Ranjit Singh, Suveg Singh, and others, again, seriously injured that day. In addition, Baba Punjab Singh, a Sikh Granthi, who was one of the priests, also injured that day, died many years later among the 7 victims of that mass shooting at the Sikh Gurdwara in Oak Creek. One of the major events in the civil rights history of America to this day, and commemorated every time this year, as we think not only about the losses of that time, but the wonderful response, not only of the Sikh congregation at that time, but also of the entire community there in Oak Creek, that responded in what the Sikh faith describes as the spirit of Chardikala, which means eternal optimism, this notion that even in the midst of great sorrow and great pain and great destruction, which all of that was at that time. Nonetheless, great optimism for the future, looking for the positive in life. And indeed, that congregation, that community, all of the state of Wisconsin, all of America, respond to that horrific shooting, that horrific event that took lives, forever changed families to this day, decided to turn that event into something not positive, but something upon which we can all build. And that is, the lives lost were not in vain. And as a result of what happened there in Oak Creek, right here in the state of Wisconsin, here in the United States of America, the government today has begun to investigate hate crimes, to pursue people who engage in this kind of behavior in a different way than they did before August 5th of 2012. I was honored at the time to be the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin on that beautiful Sunday morning, shattered by the fire of this gunman. And in the wake of that, of course, falls to the U.S. Attorney's Office, to the Department of Justice, and to the FBI to investigate what had happened on that day. And we did just that. The shooter himself killed himself on that day. And so in the end, once we determined that there was, in fact, only a single shooter, no one to prosecute, but undeniably, had he lived, he would have been prosecuted, indicted by a grand jury in eastern Wisconsin, brought to trial, and forced to confront the horror of what he committed on that day. In the wake of his own suicide in the parking lot of the Gurdwara on that day, another mission taken up by the U.S. Department of Justice, joined in by other government entities there in Oak Creek and throughout the state of Wisconsin, across our nation, all of these people came together to support the victim survivors, the families who suffered most in the wake of this horrific shooting, but also the entire community, which suffered a great loss. Again, in the spirit of Chardi Kala, this notion that out of great sadness and great tragedy comes something upon which we can build. And indeed, that's what they did. They came together, as is often the case in cities and towns across America when mass shootings like this happen. And as a result of that, came together, not only supporting the families, supporting those most directly affected by that shooting, but also committing to a time of greater understanding of the Sikh faith, of the appreciation that just because someone worships in a way that's different from what you or I may know, may look different, may appear different, may behave different, may be engaged in the basic trappings of life in ways that are different than we pursue them. That does not make them the other, that makes them us. That makes them among the sisterhood and brotherhood of all men and women on this planet, in Oak Creek, in the state of Wisconsin, and beyond. And that was a commitment made by the community at that time and the congregation that decided to turn this horrific event, a time of loss, into a time of redemption and even resurrection. And that's what they did. In the wake of that, not only establishing one of the strongest and most profound collections of Sikh materials, novels, and nonfiction books at the Oak Creek Library, believed to be the biggest assembly of Sikh materials in the nation, now existing in the Oak Creek Library, changing the ways in which we understand Sikhism in our schools. The Department of Public Instruction right now assembling still to this day a curriculum available to teachers throughout the state of Wisconsin and throughout the nation to teach about Sikhism among the other great religions of the world. All of that also coming out of this horrific event,
Jim,
of August 5th.
Jim, I'm a resident of Oak Creek, and I can tell you firsthand, they're a part of our community completely. The Sikh group goes up and down during the July 4th parade and provides water for everyone. Everyone says hi. It's part of the community. They're not an other. I can tell you that. My kids go to school with their kids. It's fantastic, and I feel great and really happy about the entire situation. Now, in post, obviously the front end was absolutely horrific and terrible,
right?
But the response of the people made me feel really, it really is a better place to live because of the Sikh people in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Brian, yesterday, I appreciate so much that comment because it exactly captures what was going on there yesterday. Again, obviously on Sunday is a time when they come together and worship there at the Gurdwara. But also yesterday, the actual 12th anniversary on August 5th, now 2024, 12 years after the event that we're just describing here this afternoon, not only bringing together members of the community, the mayor was there, other representatives of government and other social services agencies, many of the families that you just described, Brian, affected most dramatically by the shooting, were there also at the Gurdwara. And you know who else was there yesterday afternoon, had this great honor and joy to be with her? Linda Thomas Greenfield, who is our United Nations ambassador. The United States ambassador to the United Nations was at the Sikh Gurdwara yesterday afternoon, Brian, and talking not only about what she does on behalf of, obviously, the people of the United States, but also commemorating, again, this day and engaging the conversation. Brian, she talked about exactly what you're describing. That is this notion of overcoming this idea of the other. And in fact, recognizing that in Oak Creek and in other places in America, including the state of Wisconsin, we do recognize that we are all one, as you just indicated. Your children understand that, the schools you just described, all of that. And Linda Thomas Greenfield yesterday, sent here by the president, by the government of the United States of America, I had the great pleasure of sitting right next to her, engaging with her in conversation about what happened 12 years ago yesterday, but also describing, again, to your good point, Brian, the future and the future of your children, the future of school children throughout Oak Creek, throughout the state of Wisconsin. She talked a lot about education, and that too is a part of, as you know, a key feature of the Sikh faith. And Linda Thomas Greenfield, again, a tremendous history, decades of service to the State Department. She has been an ambassador at many locations throughout the face of the planet. She has been the personnel director, the human resources person for all the State Department offices. I remember her from the time that I was in Iraq, also much involved in making certain that folks at the time understood their mission. And as we talk more, Brian, this afternoon on this show, we're going to chat more about the messages, not only the Linda Thomas Greenfield provided, but then also talk about the way in which they animate even the big news stories of our time. All of that continuing this afternoon on this, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Hey, I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. O'clock, yeah, it's thick 30. I've been through a lot, but I'm still flirty.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Delighted, honored to have you with me and my terrific producer, Brian, today as we talk initially here about this important anniversary in the state of Wisconsin, across the United States of America, that we observed just yesterday, August 5th. 2012 was a beautiful Sunday morning and crashed and destroyed in many ways that beauty on that morning when a shooter came into the Gurdwara in Oak Creek and took the lives of six, ultimately seven people, injured many more. But again, as Brian and I were just chatting, the response of that community, not just the faith community there, the entire community, the entire state of Wisconsin, I recall very well that immediately after the shooting, the response of law enforcement, Brian, across this state, people getting in their cars and driving just to see what they can do to assist. Too many people, candidly, at the moment, in trying to respond to all of the horror of that day, but a commitment to the people of that community, to the six, but even beyond. Yesterday, once again, the United Nations ambassador, Linda Thomas Greenfield, in her visit to Milwaukee, yes, included a visit to the state fair, yes, included her time with some youth, with some adults as well, talking about the mission of the United Nations, talking about the State Department. Linda Thomas Greenfield, herself born in Baker, Louisiana, 1952, one of eight siblings, talked about her own history with the United States Department of State, serving as an ambassador in many different locations, including Pakistan and Kenya, the Gambia, Nigeria, Jamaica, other places, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and other assignments at the United States Department of State, now serving as our ambassador to the United Nations, representing us in that very important assignment, took the time out of her schedule to be at the Sikh Gurdwara yesterday here in the state of Wisconsin to talk about education, to talk about the learning that we all embrace, that includes a commitment to civil rights and human rights and the notion that because, once again, we are a people of diversity, of immutable characteristics across the board, we are all one. And that the hatred that regrettably does occasionally, with much too frequency in our nation and other places, does in fact mar that sense of unity and community, that needs to be the focus of our attention. She chatted very, very, very compellingly about the need for young people, for middle-aged people, for older people, for people of all immutable characteristics to come together once again and address what happened not only 12 years ago there, but also continues to animate, regrettably, some people in our nation who would bring hate into our communities and advance that over periods and commitments to engagement and community. And so Linda Thomas Greenfield here yesterday in the state of Wisconsin at that Sitka Gurdwara as we commemorate the 12th anniversary, recognizing too that the work goes on, as Brian just said, the work goes on with young people, with people of all ages, as we continue to do those things that make those deaths not in vain, but produced things that make us better. Here in the United States and here in the state of Wisconsin, the 12th anniversary just yesterday of that major civil rights event here in our state. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. Delighted to be with you this afternoon for this hour and next hour as well. As always, taking your phone calls at 855-752-4842 or drop us a note. Drop us a comment, a question about an issue that you may have. We're going to spend some time, of course, today on the major news item, and that is the announcement by now candidate, official nominee of the Democratic Party. Her name, of course, she is the Vice President of the United States of America. Her name is Kamala Harris. And she announced today and getting together this afternoon with her designee to serve as her campaign partner as the nominee of the Democratic Party for the position of Vice President of the United States. His name is Timothy James Walz, W-A-L-Z. Let's talk a little bit about Governor Walz and where he comes from, what we know about him, what we will learn about him in the days and weeks and months and hopefully years ahead as he and Kamala Harris not only campaign here in the state of Wisconsin. Brian reminds me that tomorrow afternoon, probably midday or so, right here in the state of Wisconsin in Eau Claire, we are anticipating that the Democratic nominee, Kamala Harris, and the Democratic nominee for the vice presidency, Tim Walz, will be here in Eau Claire. And Brian tells me reliably that civic media will be there to cover that event. Looking forward to that. You can tune in and listen to that coverage. And so we anticipate, again, the Harris-Walz campaign being right here in Wisconsin tomorrow. Tune in to all the broadcast stations of civic media for coverage of that, including, once again, getting to know Tim Walz right now the governor of the state of Minnesota, but actually much more than that, the 41st governor of that great state since 2019, born April 6th of 1964 in West Point, Nebraska. He is Midwest through and through. He and his three siblings grew up in a place called Valentine, Nebraska. It's a rural community in the northwestern part of the state. And while Tim Walz was in high school, his father was diagnosed with lung cancer, and that became a part of his family's obviously burden to bear, but also commitment to life, as he describes to this time. His family moved to Butte, Nebraska in his sophomore year to be closer to his parents' relatives. At that time, a family coming together. He graduated from Butte High School in 1982, the class of 25 students, a small class, right there in rural Nebraska. A year later, his father died. And again, that animates Governor Walz to this day. He talks about that. He talks about family, the importance of coming together not only in times of crisis like that, but also in times of joy and times of growth and development. Tim Walz, in 1989, earns a Bachelor of Science degree in Social Science Education from Chadron State College, C-H-A-D-R-O-N, Chadron State College. In 2001, he earns a Master of Science degree in Educational Leadership from the Minnesota State University. That's located in Mankato, of course. And again, Tim Walz identified Governor Tim Walz as the anticipated nominee, the nominee for Vice President of the United States of America by the Democratic Party. After leaving high school, Walls worked in agriculture, manufacturing, served in the National Guard, all these kinds of things about his history that we will get to know. He went to college, plainly, as I just indicated. He got a teaching degree like his father. In addition to being the governor, he is also a teacher through and through. Academics animate his life. After graduating from Chadron State College, he accepted a teaching position for a year with an entity called World Teach in China. And after coming back from that overseas assignment, he took a job teaching and coaching in Alliance, Nebraska. And it was there he met his wife. Her name is Gwen Whipple. She was a fellow teacher, again, education through and through in this family. He and Gwen married in 1994, moved a couple of years later to Mankato in Minnesota, which is, again, his wife's home state. And there he worked, what? As a teacher once again, as a geography teacher, and yes, a coach at Mankato West High School. Coached football there to its first state championship in 1999. He also agreed to be the faculty advisor of the first gay-straight alliance at Mankato West High School. And Walls and his wife also ran the Educational Travel Adventures, organizing summer educational opportunities for students in China. More about Tim Walls this afternoon as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
Cause you know what time it is. I'm coming out tonight. 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 Okay.
I can see your smile. I can see your smile shine so brightly through the window.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie this afternoon, both this hour and next hour as well. Talking in this afternoon about the recently, just newly designated nominee of the Democratic Party to be the Vice President of the United States of America. His name, Tim Walls, as you know. Presently serving as the governor of the state of Minnesota, just adjacent to us, our sister, our brother state right over here in the Midwest, talking about who Tim Walls is, getting introduced to him not only here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media on this historic day once again in America, but also as the Harris-Walls campaign comes to Wisconsin. Tomorrow afternoon in Eau Claire, Civic Media will be there. Tune in for this coverage of the nominees for the presidency and the vice presidency, Kamala Harris and Tim Walls, as they're coming to the state of Wisconsin, certainly be the first of many, many visits in this state, as we know well, certainly a swing state, arguably going to decide the presidency come November 5th. Important to be a part of the information and the education, the sharing about who these candidates are, and making choices to vote based upon advised and engaged information about who they are and where they come from. And so to that particular commission, let's talk more about Tim Walls, who is not only, again, the governor, but also a teacher throughout his life, his academic career, and also in the military. With his father's encouragement, Tim Walls enlisted in the Army National Guard when he was, yes, that's right, 17 years old. His father, probably inspiring him, had served in the Korean War, paid for his education degree in the GI Bill, and wanted his son to have the same opportunities. That's a legacy of this governor. That's the legacy of the nominee for the vice presidency in the Democratic Party. Served in the National Guard for 24 years after enlisting in 1989. During that military career, he had postings all over the place, Arkansas and Texas, the Arctic Circle, and, of course, in Minnesota, his adopted home state, and elsewhere. He trained in heavy artillery when he was in the National Guard. And during his service, he worked in disaster response postings following things like floods and tornadoes, deployed overseas on active duty for months, though he never saw combat. In 1989, he earned the title of Nebraska Citizen Soldier of the Year for all of that outstanding military service. He was deployed post 9/11 for half a year to Europe to support at that time what we recall as Operation Enduring Freedom. And his decorations in all of this stunning military service included the Army Commendation Medal and two Army Achievement Medals. He attained the rank of Command Sergeant Major near the end of his service, but retired as a Master Sergeant in 2005 and concluded then his military service, but plainly not his public service, which continues. A part of his history, in addition to the education, which is his past, a part of this military service, of course, public service, including service in the House of Representatives. Let's talk about how that comes about. He volunteered for John Kerry's 2004 presidential campaign and was eventually, based upon the skill sets that he showed at that time, he was appointed the campaign's coordinator for his county, as well as a district coordinator for Vets for Kerry. And again, veteran services and veteran support, also a major portion of Tim Walz's life and his commitment to our community. He completed a 2.5-day campaign and election course at Camp Wellstone. Some of you may know that this is the major organization organized on behalf by through Paul Wellstone, Sheila Wellstone, to create and to establish a greater sense of democracy and a sense of republic in our nation, the development of people, and not only campaigners, but also government service. People who are going to serve on our behalf, the Wellstone camp there, a part of his history as well. He announced his candidacy for Congress in 2006, Tim Walz, eventually saying, yes, I'd like to serve myself. I've supported other campaigns. I've been a part of the Wellstone initiative. And he had no opponent initially on for the nomination. And in a September primary election, was in fact the successful candidate. He had beat an incumbent first time out, a Republican, the general election in November, and took office on January 3rd of 2007 in the United States House of Representatives. After the election, Politico described his opponent as being sort of caught off guard by Tim Walz at the time. And Walz, as a result of that, said, you know what, I'm never going to be caught in that same circumstance as my opponent was caught, and has committed ever since that time always to be attentive to the constituents back home, never to be so wrapped up in Washington, D.C. and the things in Congress that you forget the basic trappings of who you are, the education, the military service, the commitment you've made to your country. And that has animated Tim Walz ever since that time. He was reelected to Congress in 2008 with, get this, 62% of the vote, 62% from his congressional seat, his congressional district. He became the only the second non-Republican to win a second full term in his district. He won a third term in 2010. He defeated a state representative there with 50% of the vote, reelected again in 2012 and 2014 and 2016. Upon his swearing in, Walz became the highest ranking enlisted soldier ever to serve in the United States Congress, and only the fourth Democrat to represent his district. The others, of course, also distinguished at that time. But again, Tim Walz, as a result of his history as a teacher, as a member of our armed services, someone committed to the service of his nation, that continued during his time in Congress. He co-sponsored a bill to raise the minimum wage. He voted for stem cell research. He voted to allow Medicare to negotiate pharmaceutical prices, an issue that we, again, are animated a lot these days, that animates us a lot, and politicians who understand the importance of pharmaceutical pricing. Voice support for the pay-as-you-go budget rules, requiring that new spending or taxes not add on to the federal deficit, that you adopt new programs for the good of America, but also understanding how they're going to be supported economically, financially. He was a part of that as well. And even though he was a part of a district that typically voted Republican, many people described Walz's policy statements and his positions as ranging from moderate to liberal, sort of a centrist at the time, and plainly attracting the attention of people on all sides of the political aisle during his time in Congress. He voted against the act to prohibit federally funded abortion services and to advance the Affordable Care Act out of the House of Representatives. He also voted to continue funding for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he voted against the 2008 TARP bill, which purchased troubled assets from financial institutions. All sorts of things across the board Tim Walz involved in on behalf of his state and his constituency. significant to note in his time in Congress how people responded to him, what they thought about him as this centrist, who admittedly was a Democrat, but nonetheless attracted Republican attention and Republican support as well. He received a 100% rating from Planned Parenthood in 2012, from the American Civil Liberties Union in 2011, from the American Immigration Lawyers Association in 2009-2010, also giving him high ratings for focusing upon the important issues facing our immigrant populations, from the AFL-CIO in 2010, from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, 2009-2010, the National Organization for Women in 2007, all of those entities giving him very, very high marks for his service, the things he supported in Congress on behalf of the people of Minnesota, of all of us. He received single-digit ratings from the National Taxpayers Union, single-digit ratings from the Citizens Against Government Waste, Americans for Tax Reform and Freedom Works. The United States Chamber of Commerce gave him a 25% rating in 2010. He was ranked the seventh most bipartisan House member during the 114th Congress, and the most bipartisan member from Minnesota, again, attracting attention from all sides of the political aisle and receiving support for the things he was doing in Congress during those years. All of that, a part of the history, the tradition, the legacy now of Tim Walz, the present designee to be the next vice president of the United States of America on the Democratic ticket. While he is in the House of Representatives, where does he serve? On what committees? Of course, he serves on the Committee on Agriculture, the Agriculture Committee on Forestry, the subcommittee there. He serves on the Agriculture Subcommittee on Commodity Markets, on Digital Assets, on Rural Development. Of course, he serves on the Committee on Veterans Affairs based upon his past history, his long tenured service with our armed services. He is the ranking member, which is the highest ranking political person in on the committee at the time in a minority position. He serves in the Subcommittee on Disability Assistance and Memorial Affairs inside that Veterans Committee. He serves on a Subcommittee for Economic Opportunity, again, when he is in the Committee on Veterans Affairs. And then, in 2018, Tim Walz announces that he is going to be running for governor against Mark Dayton, who is an incumbent Democratic governor who chose not to seek a third term. On November 6th of 2018, Tim Walz elected governor of the state of Minnesota. He defeated the Republican nominee, Hennepin County Commissioner, a fellow named Jeff Johnson at that time, and becomes the governor of the state of Minnesota. During the campaign, some of the Minnesota National Guard falsely accused Walz of fabricating facts about his service and lying about his military rank. Again, that put to bed when Tim Walz was able to establish credibly, reliably, factually, the true record of his history in the United States military, a part that also becomes part of his legacy as he becomes the nominee here. In 2022, Tim Walz sought re-election. He won the August 9th Democratic primary and faced a Republican named Scott Jensen in the November general election. On November 8th of 2022, Tim Walz defeated Jensen 52.3% to 44.6%. That's no insignificant result that day. And as a result of that, again, he remains the governor of the state of Minnesota. He was sworn in as governor again on January 7th of 2019 at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. He took the oath of office along incoming Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, the Secretary of State Steve Simon, Minnesota State Auditor Julie Blaha, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who we know also not only from his service with the Democratic Party, but also again as the Attorney General at the time of a major prosecution there of those police officers who engaged in that horrific death there in Minneapolis. He spoke again consistently about education, about health care in his inauguration speech. Significant also that as Tim Walz, again, continues to be the governor there in Minnesota, Peggy Flanagan, a member of the White Earth Nation, a member of the Ojibwe tribe. And as a result, if Tim Walz is in fact our next vice president, Highly likely that Peggy Flanagan, present lieutenant governor, a Native American in the state of Minnesota,
a Native American in these United States of America will become the governor of the state of Minnesota. No small event in our history. Also, allied with the lieutenant governor and all the others in improving life. Let's talk about some of the things that he has done in his capacity as governor of the state of Minnesota. On May 26th of 2020, the day after the murder of George Floyd by those officers there, Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan demanded justice on behalf of not only of the family of George Floyd and George Floyd himself, brutally, horrifically murdered by the police violence at that time, but also demanding justice for the people of the community, for his family, for all of us, and called the actions of Derek Chauvin, who was at that time, you may recall, kneeling on George Floyd's neck. He called that highly disturbing. He said, "The lack of humanity in this disturbing video is sickening. We will get answers and we will seek justice." That's what Tim Walz said as governor at the time of that horrific death, that murder of George Floyd. Of course, the officer went on to be convicted, not only in the state, but also the federal system for those horrific crimes. As we continue here on the Maggie Dawn Show, we're going to talk more about what Tim Walz means today, not only in Minnesota, but to all of us in the United States of America, as he takes on this role as the vice presidential campaign position for the Democratic Party here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Stay with us. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie Dawn, who today is in Madison. We'll talk more about that, a specific event, a great special event happening on the grounds of our Capitol there in Madison, a March for Democracy. Maggie's going to be at the head of that, serving as the MC, a great time to rally around Wisconsin, rally around the United States on behalf of the future of our nation and the future of our state as well. Part of that may well include a vice presidential tenure of Tim Walz, presently serving as the governor of the state of Minnesota, announced just today by the nominee of the Democratic Party for the presidency. Her name, of course, Kamala Harris. She is serving as the vice president right now under the Joe Biden administration and advocating for all sorts of things that are also a part of Tim Walz's history as well. Talking right before we broke briefly about his advocacy at the time of the horrific murder of George Floyd. He brought together the Minnesota legislature on at least a couple of occasions, advocating for police reform at that time. And eventually on July 21, in the wake of that horrific murder, the legislature did in fact some major police reform initiatives, and those included a ban on police using chokeholds. A ban on police using chokeholds, which again, part of the history, regrettably, of our nation when it comes to police enforcement, no longer in the state of Minnesota and other places that likewise have said that is not an appropriate way for law enforcement to engage, even in times of violence. Never do that, right? That's the instruction coming out of that legislative package. And beyond that, banning what's called the Old Warrior Training Program, regarded as a sort of a dehumanizing mechanism and encouraging some aggressive conduct during the course of the training of police officers, all of that banned by the legislation that Tim Walz and members of the legislature put together at that time, required training police officers to deal with people with autism or in a mental health crisis or otherwise in a situation that needed not escalation, but de-escalation based upon the particular circumstances and facts confronted by the law enforcement officers. Also created a special independent unit at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for investigations of fatal police encounters. And beyond that, a community relations advisory council to consult with police officers on their standards and their training practices, policy changes needed to ensure that all of these things that resulted in the death of George Floyd are not a part of training, are not a part of the on-the-street practice of police in Minnesota. All of that signed off on by Tim Walz as the governor, led by him, as a result of what happened there in Minnesota. As a result of all of that, obviously, Tim Walz continues to be a leader, not only in the state of Minnesota, but on other issues as well. Let's talk about those a bit here in the last moments of this, our first hour on the Maggie Dawn Show. We know some things about him because he has been out there advocating for various things important to the people of Minnesota and to our nation as well. He has advocated for the legalization of recreational cannabis as the governor of Minnesota. As a candidate for governor, he said, we have an opportunity here in Minnesota to replace the current failed policy with one that creates tax revenues, that grows jobs, that builds opportunities for Minnesotans, that protects Minnesota's kids, and trusts adults to make personal decisions based on their personal freedoms. In 2022, just a couple of years ago, he proposed the creation of a cannabis management office to develop and implement the regulatory framework for adult use cannabis there in the state of Minnesota. And on May 30th of 2023, he signed into law some House legislation that legalized recreational cannabis in Minnesota, which went into effect on August 1 of 2023 as a result of his advocacy. What about economic issues? Economic crisis of 2008 repeatedly spoke out against using taxpayer money to bail out financial institutions. In late September of that year, he voted against, as I said before, against the $700 billion TARP bill, which purchased, as you may recall, some troubled assets from those institutions. He released a statement at that time after the bill's passage saying, the bill we voted on today passes the buck when it comes to recouping the losses that taxpayers might suffer, opposing that legislation. He also said, I regret that this bill does not do enough to help average homeowners provide sufficient oversight of not only their own economics, but also the oversight of people on Wall Street. And for the same reasons, in December 2028, he voted against a bill that offered $14 billion in government loans to bail out the country's large automobile manufacturers, introduced later on a bipartisan resolution calling on the federal government to relinquish its temporary ownership, its interests in General Motors and the Chrysler Corporation as soon as possible. That, of course, a part of that bailout resolution, and stated that the government must not be involved in those companies' management decisions. So it gives him sense about his economic views about these kinds of things, that role the government should and should not play when it comes to all of that. And despite those votes against bailout bills and other initiatives of those sorts, he did vote with Democratic colleagues to support the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 in the wake of the crisis of the previous year. As a member of the House Transportation Committee, Walz saw the stimulus bill as an opportunity to work with his congressional colleagues to make job creation through investment in public infrastructure like roads and bridges and clean energy, all of that a part of his commission when he was in Congress at that time. He focused heavily at that time on job and economic issues, as he has done as he has been the governor of the state of Minnesota as well. In July of 2009, he voted for the Enhancing Small Business Research and Innovation Act. He described that as part of our long-term economic blueprint to spur job creation by encouraging America's entrepreneurs to innovate toward breakthrough technological advancements. He also was promoting assistance for hog and dairy farmers, not surprisingly coming from the Midwest and from Minnesota, who struggled with some lower prices for their commodities at that particular time. All of that, a part of his economic background that provides some insight into who this man is and how he goes about his life. A part of his life, of course, a huge part is education, not only his individual education, but his commitment to teaching as well. Indicated already, a public school teacher for 20 years, and beyond that, opposing merit pay for teachers. He voted in favor of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, appointed his strong provisions in support of public school buildings as well. Lots of things having to do with education during his time in Congress and also as governor. We'll talk more about who Tim Walz is in education in other areas as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here this afternoon on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
Which I think must, we, first of all, let me just make the statement very clear. I believe we need to legalize marijuana.